This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
An election featuring dynasties, hustlers, and the rising cost of living. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Kenyans are preparing to head to the polls for a landmark general election. It's a contest that's been described as a political wrestling match pitting the outgoing president's deputy, who has characterized himself as a hustler, against two of the country's biggest dynasties. Whoever wins will take on a number of economic challenges, including record inflation, nearly 8%, drought that's preventing millions from accessing affordable food and mounting national debt. The BBC's Emmanuel Igunza told me more about how the economy is an important talking point on the campaign trail.
Well, it's front and center of what we've been hearing. The cost of living has been very high. And also because of the COVID-19 pandemic, people have been struggling during that period. Businesses were closed down. Many people lost their jobs. The country was just trying to come back to its feet. And then the war in Ukraine happened and the prices of basic commodities has gone high. If I give you an example of maize flour, which is used to make the staple food here in Kenya, has almost doubled within the last 2 or 3 months. And therefore, these issues have been at the forefront in political campaigns that we've been hearing. Many of the candidates, particularly the two main front runners, have been promising that they will deal with the issue about not just the cost of living, but also the soaring debt in the country. Kenya has, over the last 5 or so years, almost tripled the amount of foreign debt that it holds. And therefore, this has become a real big issue. And of course, the issues about taxation. Many Kenyans do feel that the government has not addressed the issues about taxation. Kenyans feel they're highly taxed, and therefore they want the candidate, whoever wins office on Tuesday, to deal with the issue about taxation. So economy, very important in this election.
And you mentioned the country's mounting debt pile. It's hard not to talk about China's Belt and Road Initiative when we talk about this issue. Just this week, in fact, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is visiting several other African nations, and he's going to be unveiling a plan to counter China's heavy influence on the continent. Talk to us about the issues front and center for Kenyans, and particularly in this election. There's a multi-billion dollar rail project that's really stolen the focus.
Yes, of course. There are a lot of questions about this multi-billion dollar standard gauge railway, which was constructed by Chinese loans. This has been one of the main issues because, first of all, the contract, the agreement between the Chinese company and the Kenyan government has never been made public. There were issues that there was a collateral of including the Port of Kenya. The government has never clarified on that issue. And people have been saying that because of the huge debt that the country inherited and took up because of this railway line, that is why we've seen a rise in the cost of living, with the government trying to find ways of how to increase taxes for them to be able to pay this huge loan. There are other infrastructure projects which are being funded by the Chinese, and many people have been saying that some of the presidential candidates have said that if they do come into office, they will first of all stop these mega projects and try to analyze them to be able to see whether it's worth the money. Because at the moment, the money owed to the Chinese companies, to the Chinese government in terms of grants and loans is really huge, and people are really concerned about that. Even at the lowest level, constituency level, if you go to the villages, people will be talking about this project as an example of the ballooning debt that Kenya has.
The BBC's Emmanuel Igunza for us in Western Kenya. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
To Colombia now, where Gustavo Petro has become the first ever left-wing president of the South American nation. Mr. Petro took office on Sunday on promises to reshape the polarized country with a raft of reforms and social programs. They include a ban on new oil exploration projects and on the construction of new large-scale open pit mines. The new president also wants to reduce Colombia's reliance on coal, despite the country's status as one of the largest coal exporters in the world. The BBC's Katie Watson has more on that story.
With this new president, there's hope of a new kind of leadership in this deeply conservative country. Gustavo Petro, not only a former senator and mayor, but also a former guerrilla member, has promised a more inclusive government. He wants to address inequality, offer free education, improve the healthcare system, and stop Colombia's reliance on fossil fuels. And he also wants to fully implement the peace deal that was made with the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, in 2016, a deal that stalled under the administration of outgoing leader Iván Duque.
That's the BBC's Katie Watson reporting there. Checking the numbers now, stock benchmarks here in Europe are up in the 0.3% to 0.6% range at this hour. Across Asia, indices were little changed today, though shares of Hong Kong flag carrier Cathay Pacific ended up about 1.5% after the Asian financial hub eased COVID-19 hotel quarantine rules. Stress, hunger, and poverty, factors that doctors say have caused the number of miscarriages and infant deaths to double in Afghanistan in the year since the Taliban took control. Foreign funds that once paid for Afghanistan's public health system have been frozen since the group seized power. The BBC's Yogita Lamai reports that experts say two decades of progress have now been rapidly undone.
Abdul Hafiz says he tried taking his wife to the local clinic, but they couldn't treat her.
It was time for her to deliver. We took her to the nearest clinic, but they didn't have any equipment. Then we tried to take her to a bigger hospital. It was too far away, and we couldn't reach in time to save her.
His daughter, Nahid, is 18. I feel like I've lost my whole life. I'm so lonely, she says. I've lost my main support. Without my mother, my life is meaningless. We went to Keshem Clinic, where her mother was being taken.
The minute you step inside, that's when you begin to start understanding why this place is dysfunctional. Firstly, there's a very strong smell of disease and sickness in the air. It's very dingy. It's quite dark. There isn't any ventilation, so it's really warm in here right now. And there's more evidence that things here could slide very quickly if they're not helped. We're at the main provincial hospital in Faizabad, the capital of Badakhshan. What we found here is overcrowding. There are two rooms that are full of women who've suffered miscarriages. There's more than one woman in each bed.
Aziza had a miscarriage at 3 months. And she tells us what she eats every day.
I drink tea in the morning, tea for lunch, and for dinner we find something to cook and eat. We had no food the day this happened. I was going to our relative's home to borrow some rice or flour. It was a long walk. I was starving. I started to feel weak and began to bleed.
Almost everyone we met told us they could only afford one meal a day. The number of sick women and children keeps growing. Nurses and doctors are exhausted, and the Taliban's bar on girls' secondary schools means no reinforcements are coming.
That's the BBC's Yogita Lamai reporting from northeastern Afghanistan there. Finally, when you look out the window on your next flight, the person loading your baggage might just be a senior airline executive. At least that's the case at Australian carrier Qantas. It's looking for at least 100 volunteers to tackle staff shortages, and it's asked senior executives to lend their own helping hands. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.